trying to make sense of our data in construction. And construction's data is super messy, right? You just explained it. We have 500 pages of something. Most of it is scanned, right? Sometimes you don't even get real PDFs. Like, some of it is handwritten. It's like all terrible. And like, in order to use data historically, you would have had to have it structured. That's why BIM was a big thing, right? And like everybody was like, every big company was like, let's structure our data. And like they had 3-year plans to do this and invested millions of dollars. And it kind of killed the little guys, right? Because you can't do that in your company, or it's a waste of your money. What's really beautiful is now with generative AI, we don't need structured data sets anymore. I take the most messy data sets in the world, right? I take the pictures of construction sites and the drawings and the scan drawings and like whatever. And like our AI will make sense of most of this.
Welcome back, everybody, to the ConExpo ConAI podcast. I am your host, as always, Taylor White. Our podcast is brought to you by our good friends over at Komatsu. With me today, I have somebody who is most likely probably the smartest person, sorry, everybody else, that I have ever had the chance to interview. Just looking at some briefings, you know, Forbes 30 Under 30, 2024 Construction Champion, has a PhD in data science and civil engineering and MBA, Stanford, is the CEO and founder of Trunk Tools. Today, I am here with Dr. Sarah Buckner. Sarah, thank you.
Thank you. I'm blushing. I feel totally hyped. You forgot that I am a carpenter, because that's actually what I'm most proud of.
Okay. Well, hey, I mean, I would be proud of that, but a lot of this other stuff is very impressive as well, too. So, yeah, I guess to kind of start things off, I actually spoke about you yesterday to a client. I was on a job site. And they were talking about, you know, AI and, you know, how we use it in construction. But before we get into all that exciting stuff, I definitely want to kind of figure out who you are and where you come from. You mentioned you're a carpenter. I saw here that, you know, since the age of 12, you've been in trades. How did you kind of get your start, and explain that kind of story?
So I love being in construction. Don't get me wrong, but I am in construction completely involuntarily. So I grew up in a super poor environment on a farm, and then eventually I lost the farm and my dad became a carpenter. And when you don't come from a lot of means, it's normal that the kids start working. And so when I was 12, he took me out on the first construction site, as a carpenter, as a blue collar worker. And I actually really liked it. I liked it because A, it was the most money I've ever made. So I think I made like $12 an hour, and that was like life-changing back in the days for me. And then B, I liked it because you actually like build something that, like, by the end of the day, you achieved something like that you could like look at, right? And like also like not just that you look at and you can touch it, but also something that helps other people. It was just like people are so grateful when you like build a roof for them, right? Like when you just like, I mean, carpentry is a lot of, but like you just build a house and somebody lives in it and changes somebody's life, and it was just like amazing. And so I really, really liked it, and I started as a carpenter again when I was 12, and then was a blue collar worker for many years, became a foreman, became a super, eventually thought I would find, you know, my life's calling as a general contractor. So I switched from actual tradesperson to a GC, was a GC for a while, and ran large high-rise projects. And on one of these projects, whatever, like $400 or $500 million high-rise, 600 guys working for me on the job. And we had a fatality on the job site. And as much as probably everybody who's listening to this has, you know, in one way or the other experienced something like that, it was my first, and I was just like completely floored. It was like, how can I be running or managing a team of people where it's so dangerous that like somebody dies? And it was just like, I couldn't really handle it. And I also decided that that's not how we should live still. Like, I mean, it was like, you know, we were in the 2000s already, and we still have people die on a job site. And so I decided to build a health and safety app. And so that was kind of like my switch from actual construction to construction software. And then I felt like, okay, actually the impact that I can have with software is just way bigger and way more fundamental than if I just was keeping one high-risk project at the other, right? I just felt like I can actually impact bigger amounts of people. Since then, I've been doing software in the construction industry.
Wow. You summarized your whole life. The podcast is over.
Great.
Thanks for coming on, everybody. This is...
Should we talk about American football now?
Yeah, sure. Something like that. Okay. So first of all, unbelievable. I don't know. Where was your farm, your family farm? Where are you from?
In countryside, Austria.
Austria. Wow. Okay. Yeah. Which is where geologically on the map?
Next to Germany and Switzerland.
Oh, wow. So like very mountainous or flat?
Yeah, I'm a mountain. We definitely have mountains. I started skiing when I was 2 years old.
Nice.
Because that's what you do.
Awesome. And then is your business based in the West now or no?
No. So I did most of the actual construction work in Europe in like several different countries. I did my PhD in Europe and then I had a startup in Europe and I just wanted to get into the US economy mostly because the United States has always been like, I grew up reading about the American dream as like the poor little girl, like wondering about like if there's a better world out there, right? And so it's interesting. The American dream was something that I strongly believed in, even though I've never been to America. It was clear to me that eventually I want to come to the country where supposedly I can live the American dream. And so I came to the US 5 years ago for Stanford. And that was really my ticket to start another company in this country and to stay here. And the company is now headquartered in New York. So I started a company in Silicon Valley and then, yeah, moved the headquarters to New York just for proximity to customers and clients.
What you've done is super impressive. How do you do the transition from, okay, carpenter and then, okay, a foreman, super looking after these projects. And then, you know, like you said, you grew up poor farmer and then to like go to school, like, did you save up to like go to school to get it? Like you have your PhD, you've gone to Stanford. Did you have really good grades and get a scholarship? I mean, that stuff's all super impressive.
Yeah. I mean, that's a little bit funny because I very much, you know, I get always represented as like a living the American dream. And I do believe that, but a part of it is also the European dream. And what I mean with that is like the socialist society that we have over there actually made it possible for me to go to school for free. I had phenomenal education that was public. I always went to public school. I went to public university. I did my PhD at a public university. The only degree I ever paid for was Stanford. And that was super expensive, right? But this was later in my career where I actually like made some money before that. But up until then, it's again, if you have good grades in Europe, then school is pretty much for free.
What drives you to do what you did? Like, I mean, not as like some cheesy classic podcast answer, but I'm genuinely curious of what in your mind makes you who you are. I mean, to go out and do the stuff that you're doing and to come from blue collar trades, my family didn't have much. That's a success story. And I think that that takes kind of a certain person. Are you very like disciplined with yourself? What traits do you have? You think that attribute to like your success of where you are now as a person?
I have a huge chip on my shoulder, right? The chip on my shoulder is like so big that it can hardly fit on this video screen, right? And like the chip on my shoulder comes from being a woman in construction in a way, right? Like you definitely do not want to be a blonde female carpenter in your teenager years. That makes no sense. Like you hear everything that is confined as being, whatever, everybody's against you, right? And like you also don't want to be poor in a society that is, European societies are still driven very much by like whose family you're from and so on, right? Like the family name and so on. And I was just not from one of these families. And so in my youth, I was told I cannot do certain things over and over again, right? But I always was like, I just didn't buy it. Just because somebody told me that a woman has no place on a construction, that didn't mean that I actually believed what they said. And so every time I heard one of these things, I wanted to prove them wrong. So I think there's just an insane drive of like, building my own path and just going for it. And so for me early on, getting out of like the situation that I had or I found myself in was like there was two solutions, like education and hard work. That's two things that my parents actually taught me, right? Like even so, like my dad only went to elementary school. Okay. Like he did not go to like high school. But even though that like he didn't have the opportunities and my mom didn't have the opportunities, they told me like, hey, there is free education, right? And like when you work hard, you'll get somewhere. So that's just something that like I got early on and I believe in that until this day. And by now it's just like, I've gotten that far, like how far can I go? Right? It's not really much like where am I at right now, but the distance traveled is more important for me than the point where I'm at. And if I look past to the distance traveled and just do the math of like, how far will this mean for me in the future? I think the sky is not even the limit, right?
Yeah, I resonate with that. Definitely my saying throughout my life was always, and now, I mean, our company slogan literally is like work harder. And that's kind of like, we really brand with that. Yeah, I have a tattooed on my body. It was the first tattoo. I used to come into the office every day or I'd be out on the job site and I would always have a Sharpie and I'd write on my forearm, like work harder. And then eventually one day I'm like, well, I might as well just get this permanently put on my tattoo. And it was just kind of like a slap in the face. It'd be like, dude, if you're being lazy, like, get the hell up. Like, let's go. Like, nothing is handed to you. Like, let's chase our dreams. And although I think you probably are a very book smart person, I'm not so much, right? So everyone always tells me like, work smarter, because that's stupid to say work harder. And I'm like, well, when you're not smart, you can't work smarter. All that's left is working hard. And I know a lot of people that I went to school with that have a lot of fancy degrees and they're wasted. They're not doing anything with them because they have no work ethic. So I think that those two things go really hand in hand. And I think with you, because you kind of maybe have both those, you have the work ethic and you're dialed in on what you want to do and you're super smart and you're able to succeed at that. One thing that you were saying, a lot of people always say, like, don't try to find success to prove somebody wrong or to prove people wrong. It should be for yourself. And I don't agree with it. I think that it is good. I have people that I'm like, yeah, I'm going to do this just so you can see one day, you know? Because like, I'm a human being. That's what it is. I'd be lying if I said that that wasn't true. But I could kind of get that vibe from you that maybe, I don't know, like you do, like you said, you have the ship on your shoulder and you've always told, you know, you can't, and you're a woman in construction. So there's got to be some part of you that's doing what you're doing to be like, hey, look at me go.
It's for sure. It's one part of it, right? I don't think it's the dominating force. It's like, I'm just going to prove people wrong. That would be a waste of my lifetime. Ultimately, I need to be doing this for myself. But yeah, I need to fill in my cup, but I just do not believe that I just don't believe that I can't do something. Right? It's just, if it's like, I mean, there's very few things where I don't think I can achieve those things, and now I'm too old for this or whatever, right? But like, I feel if you set your mind to something and you see what steps you need to take to get there, way more stuff is possible than we all believe, right? And I really enjoy now that I've gotten further in my career and I can be something like a role model for like younger people, where it's like, hey, look at her. She can go from carpenter to, you know, like Silicon Valley tech founder. Like maybe I can also go from baker to owning my own bakery. It's like, yes. And this is all that I can do in my life, is like inspire a few people to like think one step further, and like they will actually just do it because they see people like me having done it. That is phenomenal. And that's giving me like intrinsic motivation of creating a world where people can dream bigger and like achieve their full potential.
What was the turning point? Like, what was your first big success, or like where you're like, okay, I'm out of Austria and I came up this way and now I'm actually starting to make some money? And what phase were you at where you're like, okay, I think that I can run my own business and I have this kind of entrepreneurial mindset? When did you kind of figure that out? And when was that like, it's clicked and it was like, okay, here we go?
I've always had entrepreneurial mindset. So like, there's stories where when I was like 6 years old and I stole like a Polaroid camera from my relative and I ran around the local fair and I sold Polaroids of pictures, right? It was just like, nobody told me to do this. Nobody, I mean, obviously nobody told me to, you know, use somebody else's Polaroid, but I was just very like, I like your term of street smart, right? I was just like, how can I make money, right? Or I would like sit around in front of the grocery store and wait for people to forget that they put a coin into like the grocery cart, right? And like, that's how I would make money as a child. It wasn't stealing. It was just like, you know, other people leave money behind and I can just grab it. And
well, so Sarah, is theft.
That is, what has it theft?
You're a thief. No, I'm kidding. She's got her PR team back like...
It's also like, this is over 10 years ago. So
I'm completely kidding. I'm completely kidding. I get it. Sorry.
No, I was wondering while I said that, if that was theft or not. So the entrepreneurial spirit was there. I think the first time I was managing like a smaller team, right? It was like, hey, actually, like people who are older are okay with me telling them what to do and telling them where to go, because it just comes naturally to me, right? So like, these were the first few moments. And then I think when I really kind of like started getting real drive for thinking outside the box, was honestly one of the most impactful experiences of my life, was when I was a waitress at Munich Oktoberfest. Have you heard about Oktoberfest?
Have I heard about Oktoberfest? I live for Oktoberfest.
You live for it? Okay, cool. We should go. Oh, thank you. But here's what happened. It was like, there was a TV show that I watched with my mom, and it was like the 10 hardest jobs in the world. And I went to my mom, I was like, whatever's number one, I'm going to do. And it turns out number one was being a waitress at Munich Oktoberfest. And thankfully, I didn't grow up that far from it. So I somehow made my way there. I honestly, I faked a resume to get there because I didn't have a background in this, right? Yes. And I showed up there and it was the most brutal job of my life. Nothing that I've done in construction was as hard as being a waitress at Munich Oktoberfest, because you work 16 hours a day, 16 days in a row, okay? There's no breaks. Like, you start at 8 a.m., whatever, it goes until midnight. You carry 14 steins of beer, which is 72 pounds. Okay. So you carry 70 pounds of beer, people are drunk, they're yelling, blah, blah, blah. And the most interesting part about it is you get paid only based on revenue. So there's no hourly rate. There's nothing. You only get paid if you sell and if you do your job. And it's a commission and tip, right? And so like it's purely performance based. And I made so much money. And I was like, oh, like, you know, that's how the rich people do it, right? It's not just like you do it like a few hours. It's like, no, like the rich people make money based on being smarter and not just necessarily working harder. And that's really where I was like, I think I made $20,000 in like the 2 weeks net. And I was like, great. And I was 18 years old. And I was like,
I need to be
okay.
A server at Oktoberfest, dude. I could put on one of those, what are they, Lederhausens or what are they called?
Lederhausens, yeah.
Yeah. I think I'd look pretty good in one, actually.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry.
No, I think you'll get it. I mean, you'll look good at that. We'll see if you can carry the 14 pints of beer, you know?
That's wild. I mean, like, yeah. So like, do you think like with making that and doing that, where is it kind of like, okay, now I kind of got a taste of success or taste of drive? Like, okay, this was purely performance-based. I got this much because I worked my ass off. And is that kind of what it was? It was like, okay, like you get back what you put in.
It was my first job where I wasn't paid per hour. And it was like, oh, there's different compensation models. And there's some where you can like actually like profit. This is profit margin in a way, right? This is how you would own your own business. You were self-employed all of a sudden. I was like, oh, I like the self-employed thing. I want to be in the driving seat. And it was the first time in my life that I was like, hey, I'm in the driving seat and I can fundamentally change my outcome. And so I can give you 50 more of these examples, but I remember this was so impactful that I like looked at, I switched my focus of like, how many hours can I work in a day? Because that's the same for everybody versus like, how much can I make in the hours that I have in a day?
I like that. It's almost like I should get my employees here at my company to work, you know, performance-based. It's true though. It drives, you know, and like, we're always trying to come up with something here, like an employee incentive, you know, like, okay, guys, if the company is this much more profitable, there's going to be something for everybody to benefit off that.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the products that we have at Trunk Tools, right? Like Trunk Perform is an incentive management software for blue-collar workers or tradespeople in general. That's exactly how it works, right? Like, hey, you finished the most critical, like you hang 10 doors instead of 8 doors today, you get paid out like $20 extra, right? And then you get paid out on these debit cards. And so that's kind of like direct incentive management for tradespeople so that they are incentivized to stay on the most critical path, right?
Yeah, that was a good segue into that. I had no idea.
I know everybody just wants to talk about it. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. No, totally. I get it. And we will get to that. But one more thing that I like, because I mean, although I believe Trunk Tools is very impressive and I want to chat about it, I think that you're very impressive and I want to chat to you. Do you think that entrepreneurs are something that are born or they're made? I like this debate. Is it a gene?
I have my very own view on this. And I usually have polarizing views. So like, dear audience, that's just me. I'm sorry if I insult anybody. I think the best entrepreneurs I have met are really resilient. And what I mean by that is like their threshold for pain is really, really high. And that's why they survive entrepreneurship. Like the kind of like that gets thrown against you every single day as an entrepreneur is like, and you know it, right? Like you run your own business. It's brutal, right? And it's up and downs and up and downs all the time. And so you need a really high threshold for what is pain. And people who have that usually have had very messed up childhoods or a lot of trauma in their life or like some way, shape, or form, their threshold for pain was gotten really high. So I don't think it's a gene. I think it comes from experiences in your life that shape you towards a way of high resilience, which comes with a very high threshold for pain.
Do you do anything to combat those things that you talked about? Like for me, I like running. I enjoy running a lot. Like
you, good for you.
Yeah. I'm not trying, like the way you lie. I said I like running. You're like, I do enjoy it. I love running. It's for me, it's like my time to just like zone out and hone out. And I also enjoy, like, I have a really close friend, you know, and I'm not a guy with a lot of friends, just like being in business. I'm a terrible friend because I don't get back to people ever. And, you know, I enjoy my time with him. Like, what kind of stuff do you do that helps combat those things?
Yeah, no, I'm laughing because I should really run more, exercise more. And it's just a time thing. And it's like so many people in my life are like, oh, have you exercised in the last year? And I'm like, no. So I'm a terrible like example for that. What I do to stay sane is a lot of therapy. So I've done therapy since I'm 18. and I've never stopped. And this is like, you know, a lot, like every single week. And then when I started this business, it wasn't my first, right? But when I started this business, I told my therapist, I was like, we're going to double the hours because I know it's going to f*** you. And so it's just like, I think what's so hard about entrepreneurship is that you have so many downs and you can't take them too personally because you just need to suffer through them. But you also can't celebrate the highs too much, because if you celebrate the highs too much, you'll feel the downs too much. And so it's a job that makes you really numb. And they say it's lonely at the top. I think it's not just lonely, it's really numb. Like I'm very, very numbed because of this job. And so I think I'm trying to not also like overall numb myself too much in the rest of my life, right? And so like, I think that's where I'm a huge advocate of therapy or coaching or whatever you want to call it to feel better about yourself. I call it therapy because that's what it is.
I like that. And I think you would classify me as a classic, maybe toxic masculinity of I don't need therapy. If I'm being honest and open.
Then call it coaching, you know?
No, I know. But like, you know, I get told my wife, you know, it's just like, you would benefit from therapy, because I'm the same as well, though, too, though. I mean, like having a business, I like the way you described it of being numb. And it's true. Like sometimes I look back to the last 3 years and what we've accomplished as a company. And I'm like, 10-year-old me would be like vibrating, like, holy shit, like we're doing it. But now I'm like, okay, great. What's next? That's fantastic. Keep going. Keep pushing. And then, yeah, you have those crazy lows.
It's good that you recognize this, right? But like, so I'm the same, and every leader who is, or most leaders are the same, that we have to look at the next thing because that's what keeps us going, what makes us better. It's really bad for teams, right? So like I had a sit down with my executive team and be like, we need to learn how to celebrate our wins because the rest of our organization actually needs that, right? Just because I don't need it and I'm insane enough to just keep going, like doesn't mean the rest of the team that. And so now we're celebrating our wins, and it makes me super uncomfortable because it's against my personality, but here we are.
That's huge. Yeah, no, because like culture at your business, like can easily go down the drain, if you don't try to, you know, hey, we got this big job. Great. That's awesome. How are we going to celebrate that?
Yeah, especially if you scaled it fast. We're scaling really fast. So culture is something we are, me personally, I'm super careful about. We are like doubling our engineering team right now. And so like, you know, adding overall like 56% headcount within the month. So it's like insane for a company our size.
What's your headcount at Trunk Tools?
Yeah, we had 20. We're going towards 30 this month.
People.
Yeah.
Wow.
No, cats.
Well, you never know. Today's world. Hey, I don't know. I'm not saying anything.
AIs.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. Okay, so I wanted to talk about Trunk Tools. And I want to talk about, because from what I've read, it ties into like the labor shortage and enabling. You tell me what it is. I don't want to read something. You can tell I'm reading something. Tell me what Trunk Tools is.
What Trunk Tools is as a company, right? Like we are people that really, really care about our construction industry. Like even our engineers, right, who don't come from our background, care about construction workers one way or the other. So that's what we are as a company. We care about the industry, and thankfully, we have enough ties to Silicon Valley and so on that we can actually get the best tech and a ton of money into this industry, which is cool. Yeah. What do we do? In easy terms, we built the brain behind construction, right? So we trained huge AI models specifically for this construction industry. And now what we say, we can build little AI agents on this brain. What this means is we can have little almost assistants that have this big construction brain and that will work for you, but like not human assistance, but like AI-based assistance. And so how this works, for example, is like you deploy them a high-res project, right? So say like a $500 million high-res, and we take all the data that sits on your project management platform. First, so like RFIs and schedules and specifications and change orders and drawings, right? First question to you, Taylor. On a $500 million high-res project, how many pages of documents do you think we get?
Disgusting amount.
That's correct. You want to give it a guess?
You want me to give a number? Jeez. I mean, we're doing a 4-story level residential right now in our town, and we have a book that is like this just from that.
And that's about $10 million side or something.
Yeah. Jeez. Like what are 15,000?
We got, that's a customer we launched like whatever a year ago by now, but we got 3.6 million pages of documents.
That's a lot. That's disgusting.
It's completely disgusting. And if you go back in time, right, when we had everything on paper, so we did this thought experiment. If you were to print 3.6 million pages and stack it on top of each other, the stack of paper is 1,200 feet. So it's three times as high as the building. Just the amount of paper that they have. that's what we're dealing with in construction, right? The sheer amount of documentation, and like some owner comes in, it's like, here is like this book of specifications. Please build it exactly as I've written down here. And also you don't have any time, right? Because I actually want this building to be done like 6 months from now. And so there's just like an insane amount of pressure, way too much data and way too little clarity within this data. And the data has discrepancies all the time, right? So what we do is we take all your data from a construction project, throw it against our brain that we've built. And then the brain is just way more powerful than your brain and my brain together. The brain
speak for yourself.
Fair enough. Okay. It's way more powerful than 100 of my brains, right? Because it can actually perfectly memorize all these like 4 million pages of documents. And then you can interact with the brain. For example, one of the tools we have is a copilot. You have all heard the term. It's an AI-based copilot where you're going on your construction job and you're like, hey, what color paint should I use on this wall? And instead of trying to find this in your documentations or in your drawings, you just text us. You get a phone number and you text, what color paint should I use in room 212? And within a few seconds, you'll get like, hey, this is Benjamin Moore, white, matte, whatever. And you just get a text message with this, right? We don't need you to download an app, no bullshit. Like you just text this and our AI gives you an answer.
Is there a certain size of company, like, who are you trying to target with this? Obviously, people that are building like high rises, or is it just like, is it people like construction project management, general contractors, or just like guys? Because like I have both sides. We have a construction management business, but we also have an actual construction company. Can both those use this?
Yeah. Right now we have customers from everything. We have the owners, we have the construction managers, we have the GCs, we have the subs. Within those, I would say foremen and up, we have really like spread it into like the actual trades, because usually they're not the ones that have to read a lot of documentation, but there's other tools in the works for them. So from a size perspective, I would say jobs, $10 million and up make a lot of sense. We have live on our platform, we have high rises, we have tunnels, we have bridges, we have like highways, like you name it. It doesn't really matter because our AI is trained on construction. You know, it doesn't matter to us if it's a bridge or if it's a high rise.
So it's project based then, like I couldn't use it. So like for our construction company, I mean, we're on some larger commercial projects, but we also do some smaller residential. We do new home construction. We have crews that do foundation, basement digs, septic systems, you know, lock grading, stuff like that.
I work some of that as well. We also have customers that use it for bidding. We have customers that use it in their claims department so that they can like auto generate or faster generate claims, right?
How would somebody use it for that stuff? Like explain trunk tools then. How would it be helpful for, because a lot of the people that listen to this have construction companies that are doing, you know, whether it's commercial or residential construction for, you know, site servicing, excavation, that sort of stuff.
So the question is how they would use it for which part?
How would you use it for just like a construction company, like not a general contractor that's looking at building a high rise, or they're building a $50 million tunnel, like the regular Joe Blow construction company that's doing lock grading and excavation?
Yeah. So we have a few, for example, using this in their bidding phase, right? Like we have an electrician, for example, who is like, hey, I'm supposed to make 10 bids a month or something, right? And, I get like a 500-page book and it's going to take me way too long time to like figure out what I'm actually bidding for. So I bid like this and then, you know, it works or it might not, right? And instead of that, like you can just dump all the data in our software and you can like interact with it and be like, hey, is there any specifications around I'm not an electrician, right? So like this is the worst example, but like take concrete, right? Like, is there any specific concrete in the foundation that is not our standard concrete, right? And you can ask these questions against the system. It's just going to give you an answer instead of you trying to read through 500 page specs.
That'd be handy for us. How I see that, and correct me if I'm wrong, is like we bid a lot of work, and sometimes the tender packages are very quite extensive, and you could essentially dump this massive 500 page, 1,000 page document into it, and for us for excavation, be like, is there anything about contaminated materials in this? Because as soon as you get contaminated materials, that drives up your cost of construction. Is there any rock? Do we got to remove rock? Stuff like that.
Yeah. And Joe Taylor, you probably have a list of like, you know, risk areas or whatever that your team should be looking for. So you just dump the list against the system automatically responds.
What made you think of do this? Because you were doing it?
No, my PhD was about like, you know, like disruptive innovations in construction. That a lot of it was already around like AI and natural language processing and all these like super fancy terms. But back in the days, a lot of the stuff that I've done was like trying to make sense of our data in construction. And construction's data is super messy, right? You just explained it. We have 500 pages of something. Most of it is scanned, right? Sometimes you don't even get a PDF. Like some of it is handwritten. It's like all terrible. And in order to use data, historically, you would have had to have it structured. That's why BIM was a big thing, right? And like everybody was like, every big company was like, let's structure our data. And like they had 3-year plans to do this and invested millions of dollars. And it kind of killed the little guys, right? Because you can't do that in your company. Or it's a waste of your money. What's really beautiful is now generative AI, we don't need structured data sets anymore. That's the big shift over the last 1 or 2 years where the AI itself got so much smarter that it can make sense out of the unstructured data mess. And that is really awesome for like the smaller companies, because now you get the same tools as like the Bechtels of this world, because nobody cares if your data is structured or how your data comes in. I take the most messy data sets in the world, right? I take the pictures of construction sites and the drawings and the scan drawings and like whatever. And like our AI will make sense of most of this. And that's really good for you.
How long have you been doing this?
Playing around with data in construction for 10 years.
Wow. How long have you been doing trunk tools?
3.
How's it going?
Going great.
Is it?
No, I mean, right. Like, I mean, we were super early on the AI stuff. And like now it's like a huge hype, right? So like it really helps us that it's such a hype right now.
But you were early, but you were arguably the best timing.
We were lucky with timing, right? Like I have to admit that, right? Like a year ago when suddenly, I believe in like grabbing luck when you see it.
Yes. Right? Yeah. Yeah. Opportunity, yes. Luck. Yeah. I just don't like the word luck.
Maybe opportunity.
I hate luck.
Okay, cool. I will never use the word again.
I've been told that before and I just don't like luck.
But it was like, I think we were at the right point at the right time, right around. Like we were really early with large language models and all of this stuff. And then we were really good at executing. And right now we're like the leading provider in the whole world when it comes to generative AI and construction. And that's just amazing, right? With such a small team too.
What is the plan for Trunk Tools? Like where would you like to see Trunk Tools in 3, 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now?
As an industry push, where this generative AI stuff is going is more like into this AI agents. And we will all hear a lot about this in the next like 1, 2, 3 years. What that means is that just like the AI will take over some of the workflows that you hated anyways, right? So like a good one that we have right now is like you ask us a question and our system says like, hey, we don't have the answer. And if we don't know which color to use in this room, the reason for that is probably it should be an RFI, right? And somebody on the architects actually didn't do their job very well. So we can automatically create RFIs. We can learn from old change orders, right? And like create new ones. And so there's just a lot of automating the really boring parts of comparing specifications with submittals. Every GC hates it. Everybody has to do it, right? And it's just something that AI can really do well. So we're working on all of that, right? Like automating the boring parts of construction that nobody really wants to do and really getting construction to a point where people show up to do the parts of their job that they actually want to do. The people are safe and people are incentivized in the right way. Where we go as a company is like we are hyper growth mode right now. It's working really well. We're lucky enough to have investors who really like construction, understand construction, support it. And so, yeah, we are leading in the market. I'm not going to give that up.
I got $100 and I'll give you $100. That'll be my investment. That's all I got.
Cool. I'm happily to. We can do that.
Trunk Perform. You kind of talked about it briefly a while ago. That really interested me. I want to hear about that.
Yeah. So it's another one of our tools that is powered by our AI brain, right? And so what we found with, I mean, I talked about it so that's a little bit, right? But like people are just wrongly incentivized in construction right now. Like people get paid hourly and that's great. And there's some argument for why that's great. But when I worked in construction, like for me, it was good to drag it out so I can work overtime and get the 50% more, right? Because I'm never positively incentivized anyway to like really get it done. And I'm treated like and like, you know, and people yell at me and it's like, it's just not a great work environment. And what we started experimenting with is like, hey, it's not that companies or like owners like you don't actually want to have the people participate. You just don't know how. Like you don't have a system to actively do that. And then you throw pizza parties and you give them company t-shirts. And these guys are like how many more pizza parties do you really want to have, right? Like
I throw some pretty pizza parties. So
like invite me to one of them and I might revise the statement.
Oktoberfest right? Style pizza party.
I'll come with the 14th.
I want to see that.
I can share a picture, you know. So what we realized is, like, when you look at the data for productivity in construction, it had actually gone down over the last 6 years, right? We all know that. And when you also look at the data in construction, you see that 80% of blue-collar workers in construction in the United States of America live paycheck to paycheck, okay? 4 out of 5 people live paycheck to paycheck. And then we think that a company t-shirt is going to do the trick. Like, no, these people rather have the $25 in cash so they can buy some food for their families, right? It is just very dumb of what we are doing. We wanted to change that. And we actually wanted to give people in the field and the ground the chance to participate and to actually positively influence, like, their personal outcome in this job. And so what Trunk Perform is doing is you upload your budget and your schedule, you as an owner, you know, as an employer. And then our AI automatically creates task-based incentives. Again, what that means is if the most critical path is for the carpenters to hang more doors, these carpenters will get a text message automatically in the morning saying, hey, hang 10 doors instead of 8 doors today in the same 8 hours or 10 hours of time. And by the end of the day, you'll get $20 extra. So the carpenters are motivated. They run around, hang 2 extra doors in the same time, instantly get paid out of these debit cards, right? And can use that money on the same day on the way home to pay for the gas or to pay for food or whatever. And interestingly, over 90% of the money, because we see some of the data on an aggregated level, over 90% of the money that people spend through our cards is going towards gas and groceries. That means people really need that cash, right? And so it's just something where you actually incentivize people. It's a win-win-win situation. Like, you as an owner get your stuff done faster, right? You have positive ROI because you actually stay on the schedule and you stay on the budget. The workers can make more money and use the money for their families or for, like, actual necessities, and everybody wins.
That's exactly what we're missing. And that's exactly what I've been talking about. I was just in Montana with some guys that own construction companies in the States as well, too. And we were all talking about this, you know. How do we show the employees that, like, hey, we need and can be more profitable without standing in front of them being like, we need more profits. And then I'm rolling around with a Rolex or something like that. They're like, well, dude, like, yes, we're in a Rolex. See, I just wore. And then this kind of changes that. And I like that. How rolled out is this program?
I mean, we have national rollouts in this country. So, like, people are using this. People are happy with this. And it's like, yeah, we have super high NPS score, and our top performers make $2,000 net more a month.
On the business side of it, then, how does that get set up? So obviously something is linked to, like you said, like, it's real time, right? So at the end of the day, let's say I tell my guys we need 320 feet of pipe laid today. And, you know, normally you do 280. So if you do 320, then you all get, you know, whatever, $35 more at the end of the day.
Exactly. So our tool kind of pre-calculates, it's actually, you make positive ROI with this, right? Like, depending on hourly costs and everything like that.
Cool. So it's not just some number pulled out of thin air. It's like, based on what you've priced and your profit margins and your costs and everything like that.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And then and then it's obviously integrated in your payroll, and people get taxed, like, you tax, like, you gross it up. People are not getting taxed, right? But, like, everything is legal, because I don't want to talk about you or about something that I did in the past, but, like, I remember when I was superintendent, I got a pile of cash from my boss, and I was told, like, make them finish this week, right? And, like, however you're going to do this, I don't care. And so that's pretty much, like, legalizing that system of pizza parties and the Starbucks gift cards and whatever else we do out there, legalizing it and making it more transparent so the workers can actually know, like, hey, if I work a little bit harder here today, I get a carrot, that bonus at the end of the day instantly. It's instant gratification, which psychologically, especially in the blue collar world, is really, really impactful, because that's more of a personality type that they are.
You might have me sold on this. I like that. That's super smart. No, I mean, seriously, like, honestly, I love it. I love that. That is exactly, because you could do, like you said, culture for us is huge, right? Like, we're heavy on social media and our branding, and, like, we have camp day coming up where we go and shoot guns at property that we own. And
Oh, nice. Yeah,
we do a little bit of skeet shooting, and we have a big out bonfire, and everybody stays, and we got beer, and we hang out. It's a good day, and it's a work day, and everybody gets still paid, and it's a good time. But, like, you can't do that, you know, 4 times a month, or you can only do so many barbecues at the shop or team company events. I love that, because it's a direct incentive, and, like, people love money, and that's essentially what they want more of, right?
And cash is king. Yeah. Like, we have known this for hundreds and thousands of years, and now we are pretending, just because social media is around and we have a bunch of Silicon Valley kids telling us that, like, online points are going to do the trick. It's like, no, cash is king. 80% of our people live paycheck to paycheck. Like, let's put food on the table and let's not buy into some, like, you know,
people want money. Credit card points. People want money. Okay, what's Trunk Text?
Yeah, Trunk Text is the AI product that I told you about. If you don't know what you're supposed to build on a construction site, you text us and we give you an answer instantly. So Trunk Text tells you what to build and Trunk Perform helps you to actually like want to build it.
So everything is all tied. It's all like one brain, the AI brain. And these are just all different stuff that works off that.
Yeah, it's one big Taylor White brain and then like everything works.
Yeah, well, I don't know if it's as good as me, but.
We can try to test it, you know.
Game on. I'll work harder than the AI.
You do that on podcast and like figure out it's like what's faster, you know.
You know that? Have you ever seen the show Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader? It'd be like, are you smarter? You never saw that? Oh yeah.
I mean, I didn't grow up in this country.
Yeah, true. That's a good point. That's really exciting. I love the Trunk Perform. I think that is awesome. I think that you are on a dead set path with Trunk Tools. It sounds like you are in like this crazy growth with it, and I think that tech growth is so much different than construction growth as well too. I mean, I complain that we're overhead heavy. I'm sure your overhead is insane as well too. And that's why people need investors and stuff like that.
But we actually hire construction people. I just want to put this out there. We have a lot of former superintendents or PMs or whatever, like part of our team. Yeah, because like we're building for them, right? I'm not building for some, you know, techie.
You want
to
hire me?
I need them to be part of us. I think you could fit.
Yeah, you couldn't afford me. That's smart. I mean,
but the incentives are going to be there, you know? No, so like, yeah, we love having them be part of our team. And I would say probably like a third of our company have actual construction background, like people like me come from the field. And then we also try to have a good amount of veterans. I really love veterans in this country.
Well, that's probably what's making you successful at it, right? Is because you actually are. You're not just some people that were from Silicon Valley and have never left there. It's like you guys are actually blue collar people that have grown up doing it and understand it. And you're trying to make it a better place.
I mean, we like Silicon Valley for what it does with investor money and like, you know, stuff like that. And to fail at culture, I think in Silicon Valley is really beautiful. But in the end, I don't believe that you can build a product for construction if you do not come from the industry. Like it's its own little environment. It's very complex. It's very unique. And if you don't actually understand what's going on, you shouldn't be in it.
What's next for Sarah Buckner? Dr. Sarah Buckner. What's next? Like, I know you have Trunk Tools, but what else are you working on? Are you going to run more this year or?
Maybe after this conversation, because now I feel really guilted into it. No, I mean, I'm just, you know how that's right. Like having a company like this is a more than a full-time job. So I'm just trying to make this company as successful as possible to actually have a positive impact into our industry. I think what's really cool is generative AI is the biggest technological change that we will probably experience in our lifetime. I mean, I can't look into the future, but definitely the biggest that we have seen so far. And construction is just built for this technology because of the amounts of data and the amounts of stakeholder that we have and the big mess that it kind of like is sometimes, right? And so it's just, for me, it's super enticing that we are the top company when it comes to the most significant technological change in one of the biggest industries in the world. And like, we somehow fell into this opportunity and I'm just grateful for it and we're going to crush it.
I don't doubt it as well, too. I mean, you're definitely made me feel pretty dumb just with how smart you are. But I do believe that you have an insane work ethic and good for you. Seriously, you're doing an amazing thing there. That's incredible what you've accomplished. One last thing I need to ask you.
Oh, God.
Yeah, you never know what's going to come out of my mouth.
Exactly.
Like, I follow this person in Austria on social media. I don't want like a language barrier thing to think like I'm like stalking somebody, but I follow them on Instagram, right? And around Christmas time, their Santa has like these horns and they have bells.
It's not Santa. That's not Santa.
Dumbledorfin or what the heck is the guy's name? And it has all these things. Dude, that's messed up.
Yeah, it's very messed up.
You guys are insane. What is that all about? What is that?
So it's not Santa, but also interesting because Santa in Austria actually...
It has something to do with Santa, right?
Yeah. So Santa in Austria is most of the time a blonde angel, female. Okay. Which is called Little Jesus. So we represent Jesus as a woman with blonde hair and like wings in a white dress. Look, I look a little bit like like Austrian Santa today.
Yeah.
So that's Austrian Santa that brings the presents. Okay. There's no Santa Claus. And then what we do earlier, whatever, December 5th or 6th or something like that, is what you're talking about. And you bring the kids. So there's like one person that looks like Santa, and then there's one person that looks like the devil a little bit. And you bring the kids and you ask the kids if you were good or bad. And then if you were good, Santa gives you like a little bit of presents. And if you were not good,
then they have whips. And
it's the whole BDSM stuff of it, pretty much.
Yeah.
Like literally, it is insane. And I've seen this happen. And the kids actually get beaten up. And
yeah.
And I don't think it's healthy.
Hey, I think it's good. And I think we should bring it over in the Western Hemisphere. Oh,
it's called Krampus.
Yes,
by the way,
yes. That's what it is. Krampus.
Yes. Krampus. Yeah.
It's Krampus.
Something.
Yes.
I don't know where it perfectly comes from, but, you know, we had a history in Austria and that piece survived.
Nice. All right. Cool. I just wanted to end on that. I wanted to know about it. I appreciate it. This has been another podcast brought to you by our good friends over at Komatsu. Thank you, Sarah, for coming on today. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me. You're awesome. Keep crushing it. Bye.